Hey, it's Andrew, the Director of Literary Arts. Here at Literary Arts, we rely on our community, people like you, for support. To help make this podcast and all our programming possible, give today, literary-arts.org/donate. Welcome to the Archive Project. I'm Andrew Proctor, Executive Director of Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 35 years of literary arts in Portland. Support for the Archive Project is provided by Cole Haan. Cole Haan's shoes, bags, and outerwear go with you while you work your way to extraordinary. More at colehaan.com. Today, we bring you an episode in two parts about Protocol, a dramatic Afrofuturist sci-fi podcast produced by Portland Center Stage for its PCS remix season. We're joined by the project's creator and lead artist, Phil Johnson, who wrote, directed, and did the sound design. Johnson will be in conversation with Chip Miller, associate artistic director at Portland Center Stage and producer for the show, and with Camila Bush, literary manager at PCS and its dramaturge. But first, we're going to hear a clip from Protocol, and to set that up, here's creator Phil Johnson.
So in this first act of Protocol, we are introduced to a crew of space travelers who are embarking on a mission to colonize a new solar system. You'll get to meet some of the characters, hear a little bit of their story, and you'll also get to hear the incident that changes their life forever. So I hope you enjoy Protocol, the new Afrofuturist sci-fi podcast.
It is a common misconception that time unfolds in a straight line. It is more reasonable to say that time is happening all around us, all at once.
Dedicated automatic log system online. Check-in protocol initiated. Please state your PIN.
101596.
Name and position.
Captain Chelsea E. Wadala.
Welcome, Captain. Please begin.
Elegua 4 on course for Canis Major, Colony 16, Year 7, Earth UTC. Mission update. Ship experienced turbulence passing through a cluster of dust at 0700 ground UTC hours. The biolab rapidly depressurized, killing one crew member on board. I'm at a loss. Dals, run all logs, footage, and diagnostics, everything, and figure out what the f*** happened. We have two human beings and a Machin and a bunch of damn embryos left on board. We can't afford to lose another crew member. Enter.
System report received. System report accepted.
Bless you, Dals.
Check-in protocol initiated. Please state your PIN.
923442.
Name and position.
Orin, 442.
Welcome. Orin, please begin.
Vitals are stable. Emotions stable.
At 300 hours, I detected an accelerated heart rate.
I had another nightmare.
Explain your nightmare. Humans have nightmares when they are having issues processing events in their experience.
I was walking around the cabin like normal, and there was someone there. But I couldn't talk to them. They just stood muttering to themselves. I went up to them, but when I got close, I saw they were stiff.
Please, elaborate.
It was another human. They were old with gray hair. What do you think it means?
As you grow, Your mind is adjusting by creating characters in your head to entertain you. This is a positive sign that your mind is building resilience to isolation. Verify your key objective.
My key objective is to maintain physical and mental health until we reach our destination by following Dal's daily routine. My mission is to be the first human to cross into Kane's Major.
Thank you, Oren. Retrieving footage from the Forecastle Biolab at 19:30 hours. Playing back.
Vital! You need to report now!
I can't figure it out, Captain.
Home regeneration mode commenced. Nanobots released.
It's going to take too long.
Vital!
I'm trying, man!
Everybody!
I'm trying! Nothing's working. Nothing's
not bad. It's...
What's that?
Open the door! I know! You can open the door! Come on, man! Open the door! Open the...
End playback, Dalls. Play ship log entries from the last 24 hours.
Check-in protocol initiated. Please state your PIN.
869-257.
Name and position.
Ibarra, Jonic Biomechanical Engineer.
Welcome, Jonic. Please begin.
Full Allegra 4 review and update. Confirm directive.
Confirmed. Retrieving data. Mission objective. New home. Earth. Exodus. The Alliance, formerly known as the Global UN, has dispatched a series of ships known as ARCs in search of a new habitable solar system. ARC type Deck 8, named Allegra 4, is heading towards Canis Major. All original crew members are accounted for. Captain Iguodala, Chelsea. Current vitals, stable. Dr. Ibarra, Jonic. Current vitals, stable. Dr. Wright, Gabriella. Current vitals, stable. Flight Dynamics Officer Jones, Aluwadi. Current vitals, stable. Medic, Sapient, Jason. Current vitals, stable. Ship embryonic count, 752.
Pause. That's faster than our expected rate of depreciation. Weird. Dolls, resume report with expected date of arrival.
Estimated arrival to Canis Major is 341 years, 32 days, 19 hours, 13 minutes. Ground, UCT, Earth.
What? This can't be right. Dolls, confirm arrival date.
341 years, 32 days, 19 hours,
shh,
13 minutes.
Dolls, confirm route.
Allegra 4 will use star 453-763 to provide a gravitational assist, pushing the arc towards Canis Major.
That's not a viable option. That pushes us off our mark. We drift right into Satellite 30, and that thing is a minefield of space debris. Dolls, when was our last navigational update?
11 months, 2 days, 16 minutes ago.
Made by whom? What was the PIN last registered?
Error. Command not recognized. No PIN on file. I've noticed a pause in speaking. To save memory for archival recordings, would you like to pause before resuming?
No.
Confirmed. Please resume.
Thank you, Dolls, for the system recap. Ibarra, Jonic Biomechanics. Everything seems to be functioning normal. All crew members are reporting healthy with no recent developments. However, Allegra's navigation is wildly inaccurate. And our embryo depreciation is higher than expected. I will send a full report to Captain Iguodala citing abnormalities. Enter recording. Thank you, Dolls.
Check-in protocol initiated. Please state your PIN.
687-957.
Name and position.
Gabriella Wright, Alchemist.
Welcome, Gabriella. Please begin.
I'm doing good today.
Please elaborate.
I checked in with Jason this afternoon, and everyone on board seems to be in good health, but they're still experiencing poor sleep cycles due to the effects of low gravity. I am continuing to experiment with the dream elucidators that would help ease some of the crew's sleep issues, but no luck yet. Johnny and Ollie have everything they need to keep the ship running smoothly, so I've just been, helping out here and there. Nothing too exciting to report.
Psychological evaluation initiated.
You're always wanting to dig deeper, aren't you, Dals? I talk with Jason sometimes about how likely it is we'll actually get to Canis Major. I'm sure everyone's thinking that, you know? Captain seems confident that we'll make it to our destination on schedule, but the fact still remains that no one's been out this far. And who knows how easy it'll be to establish a new life on a planet we've never actually seen. I mean, up close, with our own eyes. I know you've seen it.
Shall I pull up the most recent images of Canis Major?
That's all right. I don't need to see it. I know it's there. I've just been thinking lately about what we have left. This whole trip is a last-ditch effort to save ourselves, but what are we really saving? Our planet's too cold, the Alliance is politically divided, sapients are starting to outlive humans. Not that there's anything wrong with that. After all, Jason is a sapient, and he's integral to the ship's welfare. Not to mention he's honorable, competent, endlessly fascinating, and, sweet. In sort of a unique, but still very human way. I'll end my report here. Thank you, Dals.
System report received. System report accepted. Check-in protocol initiated. Please state your PIN.
Same as last time.
Error. Please state your PIN.
971409.
Name and position.
You're an old school piece of you know that, Dolls.
Error. Name and position.
That's Flight Dynamics Officer Alawadi Jones to you.
Welcome, Flight Dynamics Officer Alawadi. Commence Fido report.
Time regeneration of first quality biomechanical nanobots in starboard and port are both consistent and resonant. Whip staff is running like a dream. Main mast biomechs are in deep generation, and I expect full main mast operation within 10 hours with no lag time and no deleterious effects. We'll be back up to light speed in no time. Enter.
System report received. System report accepted. Submit tech report.
Submit. Now, get off my back.
Error. Command not recognized.
Get a sense of humor, Dolls.
Psychological evaluation initiated.
Dolls. Sometimes I hate you with every fiber of my being. Other times I thank God for you. Protocol keeps us sane. I count the days by you. I guess we all do. I mark them down. Which is crazy, right? At this point, the 24-hour cycle is just tradition. How about that, Dolls? You're the keeper of tradition. Bet you never expected that. I cuss at you, I vent to you. I cry in front of you. I would never do in front of anybody else on this godforsaken tub. One of these days, I'll look back and I'll appreciate that you are the thing that gives our day shape. Enter. Thank you, Dolls.
System report received. System report accepted. Check-in protocol initiated. Please state your PIN.
SP-288.
Name and position.
Jason, medic.
Welcome, Jason. Please begin.
Embryos are stable. Crew members are in good health. Ibarra and Oluwadi both expressed prolonged sleep deprivation in their last physical examination. Captain Iguodala's body scan showed signs of elevated blood pressure in the last 24 hours and symptoms of insomnia, requesting a 10% oxygen decrease to decelerate all passengers' heart rates down to within a normal range. Enter.
Request pending. Request accepted. Would you like to end your report here?
There is something else.
Suspending submission command. Please continue.
Gabriella Wright, there is an abnormality.
That was an excerpt from the Afrofuturist sci-fi podcast, Protocol, created by Phil Johnson and produced by Portland Center Stage. Now, we're going to go behind the scenes to learn how it was created in a conversation led by Chip Miller, the Associate Artistic Director at Portland Center Stage and producer of Protocol, with creator Phil Johnson and Camila Bush, the literary manager at Portland Center Stage and dramaturge of Protocol. This is a fascinating conversation about both stories, who tells them and who is portrayed in them, and also one about collaboration, a collaboration between a theater company and a creator, among four writers making one story from scratch, and the actors who perform it, all during a pandemic when no two people can be in the same room at once, a process which sounds pretty sci-fi to me already. Here's Chip Miller.
I would love to dive in and, Phil, just say, like, where did the idea to do this podcast come from? Like, how did you get to the place of we're going to make this?
It's a really good question. I'll tell you a story. So this summer, when we were all in quarantine, I wrote a short story named The Parasite. And it was such an interesting experience for me because the short story began with an idea. And the idea was simply, I felt like humans were a drain on the earth. And so it was just this concept that humans were a parasite. And from that idea and kind of multiplied by the amount of free time that I had, I was able to manifest a short story. And I felt so accomplished at the end of that process that I said, well, what else can I do? And so this summer, I started taking notes on a science fiction, honestly a novella that I wanted to write. And the name of that novella was Space is the Place. Because I was like, you know what? I actually want to write about people trapped in space. And so and honestly, these notes still exist. I wrote the first scene or two. You know, the characters are actually very similar. You know, the captain is this Black woman named Tanisha. In my version, the story starts with people in cryogenic chambers. And so I had this idea of space as the place, and it didn't really go anywhere, but I knew that ultimately I was going to write it. And I'll tell you, the interesting thing about the magic of manifestation is that I just didn't see myself having time to really write this entire novella, given everything was happening, especially coming into the fall. And so I just kind of let it go. You know, I said, it'll happen, but it doesn't have to happen right now. And then Chip, you came to me and you were like, hey, so we want to give you a commission. And at first, when you said that to me, I told you, I didn't believe you. And I was like, you're joking. And so I was like, okay, well, I don't know what that means, but sure, I'll think of some ideas and I'll keep pitching them to you to see what sticks. And the beginning of the process, I was like, well, maybe I can do something with VR because I'm interested in that. I knew I wanted to do something that was technology leaning or technology based.
And I think that was like the conversation that we were having at the time was so much about what is the relationship between technology and theater artists? Like what do a group of theater artists using technology make? And I think that we started at VR, but you kept moving the circle and the dial on where your brain was.
It's true. And that's just based on how my brain works. Actually, you posed a really interesting question to me at the beginning of this process, which was, what does theater look like now? And you were saying that you wanted to kind of reinvent theater or bring theater into the 21st century because you were saying that it kind of felt like it was lagging behind. And you were really curious, now that we can't be in person, what is theatricality? What is theater? And that question just kept going in circles in my head. And I was like, well, maybe I can use VR and create some kind of space. And I even thought in the original version of that we would end in a virtual theater, like we could record PCS and end in a virtual theater, and the piece would kind of culminate in this very Hodorowsky, you know, breaking of the fourth wall. But then I was like, A, that was too much work, and B, it just wasn't motivating me. It wasn't motivating me with the story. And so really in the beginning of the process, when you gave me the commission, I thought, well, let me talk to people who I trust about what type of collaboration I want to do and what are my collaborators interested in. And so I reached out to Taihara Kozie, who played Dals and also was a writer on the project. And I said, what are you interested in working on right now? What types of projects are you interested in? And she immediately was like, science fiction, horror, pick one. And I was like, perfect. Because that's exactly what I wanted to work on. And I said, well, do we have to pick one? Can it be both? Kind of going back and forth about, well, is it a horror that happens in space? And, you know, we started pulling these pieces, and Ty had been working on a piece that was all about Black people going to space. And I had been writing Space is the Place. And so these pieces kind of merged into one. And we joke even to this day, we're like, shoot, like, did we forfeit those pieces by creating Protocol? But in a way, they gave Protocol so much life and so much depth that it didn't even matter. And so we decided that we liked the idea of trapping people of color on a ship out in space. We liked the idea of turning it into a horror. And that was the beginning. So we started there, and immediately I was like, great. I was like, now I need to start reaching out to the types of people who this would resonate with. And Bobby Bermeja and I have been working on a horror podcast actually for a couple of years now. So immediately I knew to go to Bobby, and I know that Bobby's a huge sci-fi person and an excellent writer as well. And so I just knew that that would be the next step for this project. So I went to Bobby, we sat down, we had social distance coffee, and I explained to him what I wanted to do. And Bobby was just right on board. We were both in the middle, I think, of Lovecraft Country. So we were just like unpacking Lovecraft Country and pulling from what we saw mainstream media doing, which was using Afrofuturism or centering Afrofuturism in this way where it was almost like an introduction for popular media. It seemed like in the last year, our mainstream media was saying, hey, everyone, let's talk about Afrofuturism. And since I was right in that same vein, I was like, great, let's do that. But what I don't want to do is I don't want to call attention to race. So that was one of the first conversations I had with Bobby. I was like, I love what Lovecraft Country is doing, but I don't want to be like that. I want our piece to stand alone on its own. I want our piece to be relatable in a way that I felt like Lovecraft Country was not. And so that was kind of the beginning of the conversation. And then Ty was like, well, we have to bring Ashley Mellinger in, because Ashley runs this horror sci-fi film club and would be a great resource. And I was like, perfect. I love Ashley. And serendipitously, Ashley and I ran into each other during quarantine on a walk. And we got into this long conversation, and we're like, we're going to work together this year. And we're like, we don't know how, but it's going to happen. And so it was fate, honestly. And so all of the pieces just started falling into place as soon as those conversations started happening. And retrospectively, it's so interesting because it all started again with that just idea. It just started with, well, I know I want to create something like this. And then the universe said, well, here are all the pieces you need.
Mm. I love that when you came and said, okay, I want to make this podcast. I want to make a sci-fi horror Afrofuturist podcast. PCS had just hired Camila to be the literary manager. And so Camila and I were getting to know each other, and you described, this is what I want to make. And it was so clear of, oh, obviously Camila's going to work on this. And so I think the next step was we created a little writer's room that you and Camila ran together. And I wonder if you can talk about like what the experience of having a writer's room in the middle of a pandemic over Zoom is like.
Oh my gosh. And let me tell you, if we could have been in a room together physically, we would have. We were so, it was really interesting because all of us, especially in this writer pod, were really kind of like, can we sneak into a room together? Like for some reason, it felt like we needed to physically be there together. But one of the ways that I curated the room was I deliberately had people meet each other in a certain way. So I would do one-on-one calls with people, and then I'd bring, you know, Ty and Bobby into a call, and then I'd bring Ashley, you know, I mean, because at that point, they didn't really know each other. And so we started conversations of just introductions and just, you know, a lot of our early conversations were just, what type of sci-fi do you like? What's your favorite movie? What's your favorite book? You know, these types of things. And then we would, like, the beginning of this process was nothing but naming books, saying, ooh, yeah, I love, you remember when this happened? You know, a lot of that kind of energy. And then that's how I knew that we were headed in the right direction because everyone was so enthusiastic. And so I was like, perfect. And so by the time we actually got to the beginning of the writing process, everybody had fallen in love with each other. You know, we all knew what type of art we wanted to make. And so we really did land on that first day on the same page. And I, and again, with that whole destiny mindset, Camila coming into the room was like, oh, like you're right here with us. Like, let's go. And Camila was invaluable to this process because the three of us, again, we've been having so many crazy, passionate conversations about science fiction. And Camila would be like, so what is the story? You know what I mean? It was just like coming back and just grounding us over and over again. And that was so helpful because we had all these lofty ideas and we would talk about philosophy and Ty would talk about science, you know, and we would be comparing what we wanted to write to pieces that already existed and talking about where could this go and then what happens to the characters at the end. And there was just so many things that I felt like Camila would say that would just say, but how does that apply to right now? How does that apply to this scene? And that would just bring us back. And then it would take all of that kind of chaotic energy, but it would channel it right into the script.
Yeah, I feel like I came in a little bit like the mom energy. But I mean, I'm a person who is just as excited about science fiction, about world building as all of these writers were. And it was fantastic to sit in that room and listen to them dream and then to like try to make order out of their dreams and say, hey, this idea is great. I see this as the thread that you're following. And how can we put this down on paper? And how can we move that story forward? Not to shut anybody's dreams down, but to really turn those dreams into tools to tell the story they wanted to tell.
And I know that you all had a whole lot of things that you wanted to talk about. There are so many references inside of this podcast episode. There are so many ideas that are huge. And this is a pilot episode of a podcast. And I know that in the room, you were thinking, what is a full season? What are multiple seasons? Like, and how did you choose, this is where we begin, this is the world building we want to do, but these are the threads that we want to make sure are there from moment one. And how did they become present? And how did other ones maybe recess away?
I actually created a really interesting process for the writing workshop. Every day we would start the same way. And so in the beginning, the first kind of pre-production meetings, we met outside of our workshop, but we all met as a crew or as a writing team. And it was just popcorn lines, popcorn ideas, popcorn words. And so we got all these great things like escape room, nuclear war, sideways in time. What is the beginning? What is the end? What is it like to live in the soup? You know, these types of words and ideas. And so we would just kind of like write down all these crazy far out thoughts. And that was one of the ways that we got into it, because we just started dreaming about how do we include the line, it's not static, it's space sound. You know, just this type of thinking. And that was so motivational, because then when we got to the script, we knew where we wanted to go, you know? And so the next step was we got into the writing room and I told everyone, hey, so what I want you to do is I want you to go away. I want you to write a diary entry. And the reason I asked them to do this is because, Chip, you and I had a lot of conversations about just the technical process. And it was like, well, we can't bring actors into a room. We can't, you know, it has to be recorded at home because quarantine was in full effect. So what I did was, in the back of my mind, I was trying to kind of stand outside of the writing room a little bit and say, well, it has to be organized in a way that could be easily recorded. So I said, what if we start, and I didn't say this to the writers, but I thought in my head, what if we start with diary entries? Because that essentially a monologue would give the actors something really easy to do. They could work on it at home. They could record it at home and they could send it in to me and I could edit it. So the writers just took this away and they start coming back with these characters. I did this as well. So everybody just wrote their own character, wrote their own universe. And so that was the first day. We came back the second day and I said, great. Now, what is the relationship between these characters? Do they know each other? And so then it was just kind of like slowly sewing this together. It was like, maybe they're not just talking to themselves. Maybe there is a computer. So we'll take Ty's character of Dell's and we'll apply it to all of them. Now let's go away, write your character in relationship to Dell's, you know? Then they come back with that and it's like, okay, great. Now, do any of these characters know each other? What is their relationship to each other? Those types of things. And so we just slowly crafted it bit by bit by bit. And I say slowly, but we had 3 days and it was mania because we were just going away, writing like crazy. And I joked with them throughout the whole process. And I was like, hey, I love you all so much. And I recognize that I collected a group of overachievers and I did that on purpose because people would be sending things in the middle of the night. It'd be work days. People are like, okay, I just wanted to add this page. And like, we're not even in the writing room. And so it was really easy to harness that energy and move really fast because everybody was so committed. And, you know, we had all these characters, we had all these monologues and I said, give it all to me. I'm going to put it together and just try and create the through line. I did that, I showed it to them. And then we just, from that point on, which is about halfway through day two, we just line by line, edit. And just pulled the whole piece together. It was a crazy amount of energy. And it was just so magical to see it all come together.
I will second that it was really magical to watch, because it was such an easy collaborative process. You know, Phil said that everybody was going away and writing and then coming back and sharing, but there was so much interchange of ideas. We would read something that Bobby wrote, and then the next time we read something that Ashley wrote, a detail about the world that Bobby wrote was in Ashley's or in Ty's or in Phil's. And so the way that information sharing became central to it, the way collaboration, and there was no like preciousness, nobody was offended. There was so much love in that room that everybody could just be like, no, that's not gonna work. And we knew that we were there to serve the project. And I think that that was such a unique thing to see in a writer's room over Zoom with people who were virtually strangers, you know? Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. It was really crazy to watch.
That's and awesome. I would say every time we started our workshop at the beginning, I'd say, well, has anyone made any discoveries? Because I really recognized that you can write and we can all write in a room together, but then you can go to sleep and have a dream where you realize Olawadi was the guy the whole time, or, you know, or maybe Dallas did this, you know, it, it, And so every day we would say, let's just spend 25 to 45 minutes just talking about what happened in our heads when we were outside of this room. And then I would take notes on that. And then we would go back through the script. Then we would do some rewriting. And it was just so amazing to see how those dreams and to see how those discoveries just manifested into the script. So
I guess my next question would be, Phil, the way you and I know each other originally is because you are a theatrical sound designer. And on this project, sound is so much a part of everything. The whole world is created by sound. And you worked with Derek Graham and Sharath Patel, who are both also sound designers. So I wonder if you can speak a little bit to what that conversation between three sound designers making a podcast sounds like, and also how sound is very much a part of the texture of the script you were creating.
Yeah, so in a very parallel way, the sound room was just like the writing room. It was getting people who are really invested in how to craft the piece, how to tell a certain story together, asking them what their discoveries are. But the language is what changes. So with Sharath, he would say, oh, you know what you should do? You should use this filter. Or have you thought about using this equalization on this character? And that was just so interesting because it was just so similar to Camila or somebody in the writing room saying, well, have we thought about Oluwadi saying this line? You know, it became the same type of process. And so with Derek specifically, Derek would say, well, yeah. And I think that like this moment really needs some of this type of undertone because that'll make this text pop more, or the reverse. So maybe this moment needs less sound so that we can hear this more. And then just the game of, well, what types of sound effects are fun to hear? And where do we want to hear them? And what does DAL sound like? And so those types of conversations were also a part of this discovery language that we were creating. So it was just, well, what are we discovering in terms of the design? What are we discovering in terms of the music? And it was that same back and forth. I'll give you a little bit of the process. So I cut together the incident, which is just the most active part of the show. And so I give it to Derek and I say, this is the most energetic moment in the show. And if we can discover what this moment sounds like, what this moment means, then we'll know what the rest of the show is. And so I gave him the incident. I gave Derek Oren's first line, the line about time, and just a bit of Hulana. And Derek, within a day, had turned around this beautiful score. And he said, is it something like this? And I was like, yes. And so it was just that play of, I'm going to give you just, you know, 30 seconds. And if you can figure out what the music sounds like in this soundbite, then we can expand our mind to imagine what that sounds like on a larger scale. And then Sharath would chime in and say, yes. And now, you know, what would go great on top of that is if this voice was like this, you know, or think about this when you're approaching the equalization and a lot of the technical stuff where, you know, make sure that you have a certain frame rate and these types of preparations so that it will sound clearer and the story will make more sense. And so it was just so, again, magical to see how much back and forth all of the collaborators had. And I'll say right from the beginning, everybody was just so thoroughly invested. Everybody just threw themselves at the project. And that was intentional because at the beginning of the project, I told everyone one-on-one, I said, I want this to be a passion project for you. So I don't want this just to be something you're signing on to. I want you to feel connected. I want you to create the piece of art that you've always wanted to create. So let me know, keep conversation going about what that means for you. So if there's something that you feel like you need in this piece, keep that conversation going. And so that just kept manifesting over and over again. People kept saying, well, yeah, I want this. And I think it needs this. And then after a while, everybody was just like, yes, it has to be this because it's the only way, you know, and it became such a beautiful process.
And I want to say really quickly about the sound. I'm not a sound person, but there is such like an elegance to it, so that the technical things that I hear you talking about are so experiential for a listener, that even as a literary person, even as a person who knew what the words were, once that world was filled out with sound, it carries the same feeling as the storytelling does. And it is like, you can't take the sound away from the storytelling. The sound is the storytelling. The storytelling is the sound. It is pretty elegant and it's pretty boss. And so it makes sense to me that the collaboration mirrored that of the writer's room.
But can I also mention the phenomenal actors and Kristen? Kristen's our stage manager, correct. When we got into the rehearsal room, It was a very similar conversation around, well, I want this to be something that you have stake in. I want you to feel connected to the piece. So every actor, I sat with them and I said, well, how do you want to bring yourself to this character? And every actor had an answer and every actor had a reason for wanting to be here. You know, every actor wanted to be in a sci-fi project. Every actor never saw a person that looked like them represented this way. And you know, conversations with Hulana, where it's like, well, does this character actually have an accent? You know, is this character Puerto Rican? And I say, yes. And the beautiful choice that Victor made right in the first read of just saying, no, this character, he does have an accent. I'm making that choice. And so then working with him to say, yeah, let's go for that. And tell me what that means to you.
I love hearing that. And it makes me think of so much of what we wanted to do when PCS created the Original Works program as part of the PCS Remix season. There was the idea of how can we create brand new works led by a different group of artists that is made inside of a pandemic and asks these questions of the relationship between theater and technology. And so as you're getting into more of the rehearsal process, I wonder if you can reflect on what the relationship of theater and technology was inside of this process. Like how do you feel getting a group of theater artists who make something that is decidedly not theater?
Well, in my point of view, this is theater. And what's so interesting, it wasn't in the top of my mind the whole time, but when I got to the final product and I listened to it, I had an emotional moment, especially during the Jonic monologue at the end, where I was like, I'm hearing this and it feels like I'm seeing it on stage. And part of it was just the EQ and literally the resonance in the room. It felt like it was reverberating around me. And just the little choices, like Derek was like, let's do an act break. You know, like let's have it build and then let's have an act break and then let's start again with that build. And those types of choices, when you actually hear the finished product, it feels so theatrical. And my question has always been, why do we wrap a container around what theater is? To me, listening to Protocol, and there was so much of this represented in comments when people first heard it, is this based on a play or was this supposed to be a play? And in a lot of ways, I think it is a play. And it's just that the medium is different. And I think that one thing that I would love as an Afrofuturist to do is to break down these barriers of what is theater and what is theatricality. Because my intention with this piece was to show that you can create an art piece that is cinematic in one way or theatrical in another way, but it is neither of those things, right? So it's showing you that those terms actually are more malleable than you think.
I think that's what's so exciting about being a theater artist at this time. And you know, there you hear all the time people saying that there's going to be no substitute for in-person sitting in a theater, looking up at a stage and experiencing theater in that way. But what's so exciting about being a theater artist in this time is that we are adaptable. This is not the first time in our history that theater has been outlawed, and it probably won't be the last time. And so the only way we survive is to embrace different mediums to embrace the future. And, you know, you mentioned being an Afrofuturist and that being a guiding force. And somebody said to me once, you know, to imagine ourselves in the future has to be a discipline for us. And I think that that is just as important as a theater artist as it is for me as a Black woman. Because if we cannot imagine ourselves in the future, then theater dies. It doesn't continue. But here we are. We made this cinematic theatrical podcast, and that is a form of theater. And there's no substitute for in-person, but there's no substitute for what we just did.
Mm-hmm. I love that answer so much. And it moves me to want to talk about Afrofuturism a little bit, because you both brought it up here. And I think just in connection to all of this, I remember like learning the term Afrofuturism. And I think of this anecdote that Whoopi Goldberg shared about how Star Trek was her favorite show growing up because it was the first time she ever saw Black people in the future. And this idea of being able to see the lineage of yourself, being able to see, I will exist further out than I myself can exist. My people will go on. And I guess in setting out to create an Afrofuturist podcast, what do you do? What do you read? What do you reference? What is it that makes this podcast Afrofuturist?
Well, I really like the way that you described Afrofuturism there, but I would even expand it. And I think that Afrofuturism has a lot of different meanings, a lot of subjective meanings, because in my point of view, Afrofuturism basically applies to creating a world in which you can see yourself. And this is coming from the point of view of a Black person. So it doesn't necessarily have to be in the future. Afrofuturism can be placing Black people in thrillers. Afrofuturism can be rewriting history. Afrofuturism can be science fiction in space. There is a futurist element to it, but I think that what Afrofuturism really does and does well is it promotes representation. And that's what is missing from our world today. And we are turning the curve towards representation. We see things like Lovecraft Country now, and we see, you know, Us. And those types of things didn't exist before, you know, I mean, we not on the scale that they do today. And so where I was coming from in this piece was to create a piece that is Afrofuturist in that it represents people who are not traditionally represented, but also to represent them in a way that's not specifically using their race as the means to do that. So I wanted to create a piece that's a story. And for me, that's very Afrofuturist. It's very Afrofuturist to say, well, what do you do when you put, you know, people of color in space? Or what do you do when you put people of color in situations that we've seen tons of white people, you know, everything you can imagine, right? We've seen them go deep sea diving. We've seen them go to space. We've seen them go backwards and forwards in time. You've got all of these stories. And literally for me, Afrofuturism is just taking those elements and putting Black people in those situations, or people of color in general in those situations. And so that was really where I came from. I wanted to do that. And so you're right, there's tons of text. And I think that, like, you know, Octavia Butler being the first one that comes to mind and a huge influence for a lot of the work that I do and also our group did, you know, just writing history, centering Black people, brown people, people of color, intersectional people in this way where even though I may not be that person, I still can relate to what they're going through. So that was the guiding force of the Afrofuturist theme or motif for this piece. And I think it'll live on. And I think there's even some funny moments where Ashley wrote a line. She's writing a line for Gabriella about Jason. And she says something like, not that that's a bad thing. You know, she's saying, well, you know, sapiens are living forever. Not that that's a bad thing. You know, this idea that we're talking about a different type of relationship to race We're not talking about race as we understand it. And I just love that because I didn't want people to come away and saying, well, that was a really good Black work of art. You know, I wanted them to come away and say, that's a really good science fiction piece. And I think we achieved that.
I think we did too. And I think that like what I love about Afrofuturism and what I see reflected in Protocol is that it's an opportunity to imagine new systems of justice, new systems of existence, and placing and centering people of color and their survival and the way that they thrive and the way that we can live. Afrofuturism should tell us about what we can do now to imagine ourselves in those better systems. And so like you brought up Lovecraft Country, and I, you know, people say it can't, how is it Afrofuturism if it's set in the past? And it's like, well, if we imagine the past differently, then it stands to reason that our present would have to be different because of that. And so if we are imagining a future, if we're imagining a time where we Black people, people of color on a spaceship in the middle of space headed towards Canis Major, we can now go backwards to our present and say, how do we get there? And how do we change the systems that we're living in right now so that in, when we do hit the point where we are sending people into space, we are on that ship and we're invited into that world.
That answer, those answers are incredible. So thank you. It's been great talking to you all today, and I could literally sit in dialogue with you for another few hours about this, and I can't wait to go back and listen to the podcast again.
That's all for this week's Archive Project, featuring an excerpt from the pilot episode of the Afrofuturist sci-fi podcast, Protocol, and a conversation with its creator, Phil Johnson. You can hear the full episode of Protocol online for free through April 4th at pcs.org. Protocol was conceived, created, directed, and sound designed by Phil Johnson and written by Bobby Bermea, Tahera Cozier, Phil Johnson, and Ashley Song Mellinger. A special thanks to all our friends and colleagues at Portland Center Stage for collaborating on this episode of the Archive Project, including Marissa Wolf, Chip Miller, Camila Bush, Claudie Jean Fisher, and Sharon Martell. This has been Literary Arts, the Archive Project. It's a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 35 years of literary arts in Portland. Join us next time for The Archive Project, a literary arts production in collaboration with Oregon Public Broadcasting. To hear more from The Archive Project, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Support for The Archive Project is provided by Cole Haan, on a mission to fuel your big ideas. More at colehaan.com. Our show is produced by Crystal Liguori for radio and podcast, with production oversight by Amanda Bullock and support from Liz Olofsson. Special thanks to Joe T. Roy and the entire Literary Arts staff, board, and community. This show would not be possible without them. Thanks also to the band Emancipator for our theme music, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andrew Proctor, and this has been another episode of The Archive Project from Literary Arts. Join us next time and find your story here.